Sergey Yuzvinsky, who's going to talk about topological robotics and other issues.
Thank you.
Well, before you start, let me also thank Sandy and Sherman for helping to set up everything, and if you have any technical problems, they're the ones to blame, or to get help from. Also, Dennis and Key are co-organizers of this, and so if you have any questions, ask any one of us. Okay, sir.
Well, I don't have questions yet, but of course I want to thank the organizers for arranging the weather like this and for inviting me. The title is, of course, ambiguous. A lot of people would understand it in a different sense. So let me first try to explain to you in what sense we understand it. And we would mean Michael Farber, who essentially initiated the definition, main definition. And then some results were proved also with another character from Penn State. And first, well, let's call it setup. So, what should one start with at a topology seminar? X is a topological space. But just to understand what's going to happen, think about it as a configuration space. There are, by the way, universal. Well, again, different people understand different things on the configuration spaces. So let me give you just two very simple examples about, well, one is maybe not so simple. So examples, say, n ordered point distinct in RM, famous configuration space. Or, well, this one is more complicated, but anyway, take a mechanism like that. This thing is in R3, and this is fixed. And say, just to be precise, let's write 2, 2, and 2. It's in R3. The low bar is fixed, the lower bar, and everything else, rotations here are 360, whatever, self-intersections are allowed. Well, topologists here immediately say what the configuration space is of these things. I don't factor by anything, by the way. It's R. More or less immediately you can see vibration over S2 with S1 as a fiber. What vibrations may be little? Well, it's clear too. Anyway, here are two examples. Okay. Well, we consider this as configuration of sort of robot movement, which means that robot can move from one point to another. So let's assume that X is path connected. So X is path connected. What do we want? What is the problem? The problem is to exhibit a motion planning. What does mean a motion planning? Well, let's take two points, A, B, and X, two positions of the robot. And we should move. We should teach our robot to move from one to the other. So we need a path from A to B. So what does it mean? Well, it means, mathematically, sort of, that we consider all pairs here. We consider the famous vibrations. Some people think call it surf vibration, where to each path you assign the initial point and the end point. By the way, I may not use sometimes, I may sleep sometimes in not standard terminology, so please ask questions or correct me on whatever you like. So this is, again, to each path we assign first point and the second point and the end point. And what we're talking about here, we're talking about a section. S, pi after S is identity. Well, so what? This is the end of the story. Well, if there were a section, it would have been. But it's not very, it's not hard to prove. Of course, in topological seminar by section, I should mean continuous section. And proposition, very simple. S continuous, because some people from other areas, they don't assume continuity, exists if and only if X is contractible. Simple exercise to prove. So it's not very interesting class of spaces, contractible spaces. Well, so what if it's not contractible? We can define how much. Okay, so what does it mean that the thing doesn't exist? It means essentially, as we understand, is that you cannot prescribe to give robots some formula, some continuous formula, with continuously depending on the parameters and saying that if A and B are such, do that. Okay, how many formulas can we give? Can we go by with how many formulas? So, definitions. This is the main definition. We just abbreviated as topological complexity of X. But, of course, this is, again, ambiguous words. Topological complexity of motion planning. This is probably the complete thing for that. It's the minimal K, natural number, such that there exists, say, open covering of K things. So they say that they are open, which is not very important, such that there exists a section on each of them, section of the whole thing, so it's U sub I 2PX. And pi after that is identity.
Do you want this to be open in X cross X, or do you want UI cross UI?
I want them open and cover X. X is connected.
The section should go from the partition corner.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, of course. Thank you, Key. Yeah, of course it should. Yeah, this is a typical slip. Of course, they should cover X cross X, of course. Definitely. Open is not very important. If for example, it's very often more convenient to make them disjoint, and then you have to require something like ENR, Euclidean neighborhood retract. And then it's equivalent to them being open and intersect. Mm-hmm.
And this proposition needs no further assumption on X.
Like no, in the proposition.
The vibration is actually the Rabich vibration.
For example. But there is absolutely direct proof, not even using essentially property of vibration. In what sense is this vibration? So.
It just has to be connected.
It has to be connected. That's correct. It's sort of very explicit proof. You exhibit homotopy in both directions. So this is the definition. Well, of course, experience, yes?
So is
equivalent to saying that each UI is contractible in X?
No. 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 That's again, a famous misunderstanding of this definition. No, it's not equivalent to say. More than that, your question probably relates to recognizing this thing. Or people can immediately recognize this thing as, well, actually what it is. So the history of definitions like that, of course, started with Lusternik, Schliermann categories. But they relate to only to X and covering of X indeed by things contractible in X. The next step was, though, it's a little less known, was made by Schwartz, Albert Schwartz. I'm not sure how his name is spelled. It's spelled in different ways, of course, as many Schwartzes. Ask him, he's almost belongs to the seminar. He's at Davis. In any way, he defined what we called Schwartz genus, and what is sometimes called section category, which is essentially the same definition but for arbitrary vibration. Take arbitrary vibration and give this definition. That's Schwartz genus of the vibration. And more than that, this genus was rediscovered, for example, by Smale, and he used it for topological complexity of algorithms for finding roots of polynomials. And then Vasiliev, first of all, explained to Smale that it was already discovered, or probably previous people did that. I don't know who showed this work to Smale. Schwartz was published in 1966. And second of all, Vasiliev generalized Smale's results in his thick book. If you know Vasiliev's book, it's a lot about that, the whole chapter about this complexity and using the Schwartz genus. So what we define is a particular case of Schwartz genus. Of course, the point is that this is not an alien vibration with respect to X. This is vibration which is sort of natural for X. It's defined by X. So, after that, here is a pure mathematical problem. Compute this TC of X. Schwartz genus is famous to be hard to compute. Well, so how one computes things like that? Well, first of all, one studies properties. And properties are similar to what other things like that have, but there are some variations. Well, first and foremost property is that it is a homotopy invariant. Again, it's sort of direct proof. There is not, you prove that if something dominates something else, then something else has smaller TC or equal to. TC cannot grow when you dominate. Fine. If you compute something, it would be nice to have, want to compute something, it would be nice to have upper and lower bounds. Well, again, they are more or less typical, so an upper bound. TC of X, let me just try it, is less than or equal to 2n plus 1. Well, no, 2n is not good here. Let's write dimension of X. What is dimension of X? Well, if X is simply show or CW complex, that's the usual dimension. If X is paracompact and can be covered by, besides by contractable open sets, and it's again the dimension and so on. There are many dimensions. Essentially, more or less any dimension you know can be used here, maybe with some exceptions. Okay, three. Let me give you another one and then to come to the most interesting one. So the other one is product formula or product inequality. It's interesting to try to guess what it is. Usual intuition, unless you experience, doesn't work pretty well here. So I want to write what is, or at least estimate, in terms of TC of X and TC of Y. Well, what do you think inequality should be? Well, look, we're talking about covering Cartesian product, right? If we have product, Cartesian product is a product. So one is covered, the other is covered. So the first thing intuition says it's a product of TC of X. But you can combine this product of open sets. You can sort of work on the diagonal of this Cartesian product. And if you count number of diagonals, it's the sum minus one even. This number is nothing but number of diagonals on a, if you like, chessboard. Well, not necessarily square chessboard. If you count number of these diagonals, it's what you've got. Now, the most interesting property, which again is natural for all invariants like that. It's a low bound. Lower bound always comes from Kohomovich. So let's consider H star of X. Well, say field coefficients. Again, it's not terribly important what coefficients you choose. It's not even terribly important which cohomology theory you choose. Anything which is multiplicative would work here. But let's concentrate on this. Let me not make false statements. So let's even say that coefficients are in the field. Okay, consider tensor product. After all, we're talking about Cartesian product. Of course, Cartesian product can be immediately converted to integrated algebra by usual means. So this is an algebra, graded algebra. If you like, graded commutative. Where when you multiply simple tensors, you consider elements homogeneous, at least two which are next to each other, and you define it as negative one to the product of degrees B and C, and after that, usual non-graded product AC tensor BD. In simple situations, this is nothing but cohomology ring of the Cartesian product. Okay, more than that, we achieved more when we project this to H star of X via multiplication, we get an algebra homomorphism, graded algebra homomorphism. Let's call it mu. When you have graded algebra homomorphism, you have the ideal. So J is kernel of mu. Well, at least when this algebra is, say, finitely generated, well, anyway, in good cases, of course, this ideal is nil ideal. I mean, you cannot multiply, you cannot write too long products. So let's define. So some people use length, some people use nil degree or something like that. Nil, I don't know what else, nil rank of this ideal is, well, minimum, or rather maximum, say, k, such that j to the k is not zero. Well, if by any chance such thing doesn't exist, by the way, the same should be said about initial definition. If the thing doesn't exist, then put it infinity. It's also called, this ideal is called zero divisor ideal, and this sometimes is called cup lengths or something like that of zero divisors. Anyway, this is more or less famous number. Well, finally, the property. Tc of x greater, strictly greater than, I didn't call it anyhow, let's call it L of j, greater than L of x. So if you know your cohomology ring well, you know a low bound on Tc. Well, let's do some, that's essentially all properties which I wanted to mention. It's number three. Let's do some simple examples. S1. Well, on the one hand, dimension is 1, so Tc of S1 is less than or equal to 3, right? On the other hand, let's exercise a little on the last low bound. It's probably a good place to start exercising on it. So what is an element in there? What is typical element in there which is in the kernel? Well, of course, the most sort of canonical elements from the kernel you can write. You can take something from something to lower dimensional from H1 of X. Well, let's take, I don't know, generator. How do you call this generator? E. Then we need element in the product, in the tensor product. Well, let's denote by E tilde. Think like that. 1 cross E minus E cross 1. Definitely zero, right? Definitely the kernel. More than that, it probably can be proved, although not completely, but anyway, these elements very often realize the lengths. If you multiply these elements here, there is nothing to multiply by, but, well, a little bit, you can multiply it by itself. How can you multiply it by itself? Well, you can figure out that E tilde times E tilde square, it's still non-zero. What is it? Is it non-zero indeed? Somewhere I computed this for any odd sphere. Yeah, it depends. It's either zero or E cross E. Is it E cross E or it's zero? That's only question. There is a choice. Well, in any case, well, I can check, of course, the general formula. For arbitrary sphere, it should be minus 1 n minus, yeah, I'm afraid here it's 0. Minus 1 E cross E, where IN is the dimension of sphere. So this is zero. So we don't get the answer yet. What we've got is the following. TC of S1 is less than or equal to 3, and strictly greater than 0, greater or equal to 1. Nothing multiply anymore. I mean, that's it. Well, on the other hand, you can exhibit. So, first of all, you can immediately forbid that because of the very first proposition. TC equals 1, it means there exists a global section. And global section exists only if X is contractible and is not. So we can put 2 here. And after that, we can exhibit some motion planner. For S1, with 2 sets. Maybe once it's useful to do this too also. So, and it's essentially the first which comes to mind. That's why this is simple. And when we exhibit a motion planner with 2 sets, we are done. It would mean that TC is 2, because it's greater than 1. Consider U1 and U2. U1 consists of a B such that B is not equal to antipode. I don't know, minus is a decent notation for antipode. A to the negative 1 is better for me because after all it's C. It's complex numbers. Well, B is not equal to A. So there are 2 open sets, or usual open sets, covering circle. And on the first one, the section is move. Of course, you can fix orientation on the circle. And the first S sub 1 move, say, A to B. Well, with constant speed for example, it could be on shortest arc, but let's say on arc by orientation, on the oriented arc, directed arc. And S2, first, move A to minus A, standardly, again, a long orientation. I actually didn't need orientation for the first thing, just shortest arc. And here A to minus A, somehow standardly, a long orientation, for example, and then minus A to B. So they are not opposite. So they define shortest line, shortest arc. Yeah, here it's probably confusing to say an oriented arc on the shortest arc.
Otherwise, something
is wrong. Shortest arc, right. Otherwise, it looks like you can do with 1 set, which is impossible. Okay, so this was the example which I did in detail. Well, let me give you the answer for another example, which may again defy intuition that the thing should grow with the dimension. Well, how about Sn? If n is odd, we can essentially repeat what was done here using a vector field, tangent vector field, and get 2. When n is even, we cannot do that, but we can build, taking the same vector field, but already with a singularity in 1 point, with 0, we can build with 3, think, and That's the answer for spheres. It's either two or three. Okay. Well, let me give you another simple example. TC of X, if X is a graph, topological graph, so dimension of X is 1. And let's say simplicial complex of dimension 1. Then, again, everything depends on, say, first Betti number. So Betti number is 0, it's contractible. So TC is 1. When Betti number is 1, it's first Betti number, it's the same as a circle homotopically, so it's 2. If you think about other thing, when Betti number is greater than or equal to 2, then actually this homological criterion will do the job. And you can immediately prove that it's 3. Let me check in computers for a while. Yeah, because it's less, yeah, right. It's less than or equal to 3 immediately by the dimension. Right. Okay, now, not so simple classes of examples. Sort of serious classes of examples. So number 4. C n of R m configuration spaces. Well, let me. I promised to speak about arrangements a little, so let me first re-understand configuration spaces, trivial sort of linear algebra. Let's take m equals 2. Everything can be seen there. M equals 2, we have several points, we can say, in C. R2, fix the complex structure. So n points ordered distinct in C. Well, say x1 and so on, xn. Write them as coordinates since, and you get Cn. But they are not equal to each other, right? So we have to throw away something from Cn. What are we throwing away? We're throwing away union of hyperplane, Hij, where that's enough to take I is less than j, where Hij is given by x sub I such that xi is equal to xj. Oh, but this is very famous bunch of hyperplanes. In particular, as a complement, this complement, let's call it M, can be probably discussed from at least 3-4 areas of mathematics. It's k pi 1, by the way, where a pi is a braid group. It's a complement to mirrors for permutation groups. So it immediately reflects something about permutation group, about braid group, and so on and so on and so on. In any case, cohomology. Let me continue a little. So for n equals 2, for m equals 2, this is complement to hyperplanes. Similarly, so likewise, For arbitrary M, say greater than 2, M is a complement, the complement to several union of several subspaces, linear subspaces. Well, it's in C, M. Well, it's in R. It's not C anymore. There is no C. In R, M, N. And the subspaces of codimension M. So in particular, these are spaces whose cohomology ring is well known. Cohomology rings are well known. They are well known starting from famous Arnold Brisk-Korn Orlik-Solomon theorem, which relates to M equals 2, and then it was pushed to other M's without much problem. On the other hand, it was known from completely different sides, sort of from, I don't know who was the first here, but Fred Coyne definitely proved a lot here. So the point is that H star of, in particular, of this M is well known. Maybe, so I have about 15 minutes, right? Maybe I even define it. It's a so famous algebra that it would be a shame not to define it. It is, well, here maybe I should add generalized Orlik-Solomon algebra. In particular, here it's generated by EIJ, the same IJ which are there, sort of this EIJ in one down correspondent with HIJ relations. And now it depends. So in degree M minus 1, am I doing it? Yeah, I'm doing it essentially for arbitrary M. So degree M minus 1, so there are standard relations. Is a commutative, it should be graded commutative. So first it's graded commutative. These are general relations, and besides, relations of the type generating relations are enough. Eij, Ejk minus Ei. So what I'm saying, Ij, Jk, and Ik. And it's Ij, Eik plus EJK, IK, EIK. Okay, that's good enough. For arbitrary triples, I, J, and K, not equal to, say, less than. As...
So it's less than equal 0?
Yeah. It's a relation, yeah. This thing is written.
Do you allow I equals K?
No. I equals, from the beginning, indices are distinct.
I think the last plus should be a minus.
I thought about it that I probably But does it matter? Can't you order? Canonically, it should be like that. But I'm not sure that it matters. Usually the thing is written, it's a lot easier to write the thing for arbitrary hyperplane arrangement, than where indices are only one index of a hyperplane. But then you have to say that the point is that these three hyperplanes are linearly dependent. They are functionals are linearly dependent. Xi minus xj, xi minus xk, and xj minus xk. They are linearly dependent. That's the point. And for each linear dependence, you should write a relation here. Okay, so what? Well, one can study this couplings L of J. In computation here, of course, done with the same thing. So you define this. Aij is 1 cross Cij minus Cij cross 1. And then the first idea, well, what is the dimension here? The maximal, how to say it, homological dimension. Homological dimension of M is N minus 1. So how many of these guys you can multiply not to get 0? What? So if I multiply several of them, so homological dimension N minus 1 says that if you multiply more than 2N minus 2, look what you get here when you multiply. You get some words on one side and some words on the other side. And both of these words cannot be, either one of them cannot be longer than N minus 1. So 2N minus 2 is the max. Interestingly enough, 2N minus 2 doesn't work, it's 0. 2N minus 3 for this arrangement does. So L of J, it's not completely trivial theorem, is 2N minus 3. People who are interested in arrangement of hyperplanes have a problem here. To compute this for arbitrary arrangement, it's not known. For some, it's known. In particular, to prove that the thing is defined. Well, so far, sorry, I'm ahead of myself. Let me finish this, which means which immediately implies that TC of M, by M I denoted this thing, well, I can write now officially C sub N R2, it's greater than 2N minus 3, greater than or equal to 2N minus 2. On the other hand, another non-trivial theorem is that what is this complement? What is this space? This space is open manifold. However, it has a type, homotopy type, of finite simplicial complex. More than that, the finite simplicial complex has dimension N minus 1. So, dimension actually of CNR2 is N minus 1. I don't know if it's simple for this particular arrangement. So, generally, it's a called Solvetic complex, which first proved this. It was a big theorem that it's homotopy equivalence. For this particular, it doesn't follow formally from homological dimension because it's not simply connected space. For other M's, it would. But here it doesn't follow what dimension really is. But anyway, this is true, which immediately implies that TC of C And R2 is less than or equal to 2n minus 1. But now, another point. So far we have a gap in 1. I don't think engineers care very much, but we mathematicians have a gap. I'm not sure that engineers care about that at all. How to kill this gap? Well, it's another consideration. Look, we have homogeneous, we have arrangement of linear hyperplanes in CN. C star is acting there, right? We can projectivize this thing. C star is acting more than that. So this M, actually fibered, M, well, C and R2, is fibered with fiber C star, which is S1, C star. But more than that, you can very easily prove that it's a trivial vibration on this arrangement of hyperplanes. It's not true for subspaces, and the vibration is trivial. You sort of can move for the base. Of course, base is projectivization of all this, but you can realize it as intersect with hyperplanes, which is one of them lifted by one, say, shifted by one, affine hyperplanes, and realize there by intersection. Anyway, it's not hard to prove. Which initial all go to the origin, but to realize the base of this vibration, you consider a fine thing. You lift it, you lift one of the hyperplanes by one and intersect everything with it, so you get a fine. They don't go through the origin anymore. And it's true, this fact, true for any hyperplane arrangement going through the origin, linear hyperplanes. You always can identify these two things, these two classes. Which immediately says by this is homotopy equivalent to S1, and by product theorem, so by product inequality, you immediately get that actually TC, since this has dimension one less, TC CN R2 is less than or equal to 2N minus 2, which makes the precise computation. Well, TC CNRM. This was M equals 2. M is even. M is odd. M is odd, it's 2N minus 1. One more. M is even. It should be 2n minus 2, but we don't know that. It's 2n minus 2 or 2n minus 1. Conjecture is that it's 2n minus 2, like for m equals 2. So n even and greater than 2, it's a problem. Not very significant. I would recommend it. Anybody to spend his or her life on that, but it's sort of a problem. Okay, now I have for about 5 minutes, maybe a little more, because I started later, and I can come to the subject matter of the talk, as it customary, to this example. So far, for arrangements, the answer was increasing, indeed, with the dimension. But, for example, for spheres, it does not. It's 2, 3, 2, 3, 2, 3. So how about, this is a funny thing, indeed. What would it be? Maybe in tech, something in tech. 2 hours. I usually use 2 hours for this hour. I don't know about you. Anyway, projective, real projective spaces. Well, let me formulate a theorem. And the theorem is very easy to make mistake, plus minus one, you know. You never know what is really true. So, theorem. The following are equivalent. First of all, Tc of RPN is less than or equal to k. So it's, we're discussing function of n here. Second, there exists a to-be-defined non-singular map Rn plus 1 cross Rn plus 1 to Rk. Rk, right? Yes. Third, if n is not equal to three famous numbers 1, 3, 7, then it's still equivalent to RPN be having an immersion, well, it's not anyway embedding, it's an immersion, to RK minus 1. There are equivalences, but for them, more definitions should be given. So let's first give a definition of the word which was not defined there, although, of course, it's defined in other situations differently, so let's be careful here. So R, say, it doesn't matter. Here, it doesn't have to be equal. Is non-singular if, well, first of all, it's non-singular. In other words, mu of AB is zero if and only if A or B is zero. I am not assuming bilinearity. I am not assuming any linearity at all. Second, it's what Key taught me should be called bi-skew. Although somehow we avoided this adjective. I don't know why. It could be called bi-skew. It means that mu of minus AB is equal to mu of A minus B. Oh, by the way, one direction probably falls from here. And it's equal to minus M of AB. That's what we call non-singular. So official name should be non-singular by skew. No linearity is assumed. So this was not our creativity just popped up. It turned out that this relates, so any time when you have this, you have some upper bound on Tc. The other direction is a lot more convoluted, but on one direction it was just essentially directed. What's interesting, how to, for example, prove the next thing. People who know immersions, this old problem of immersions of projective spaces, they know that other mappings are involved there are more than that equivalent to the problem, so-called axial mappings. So let me remind you, so a map P, let me write, so it's, first of all, they're all real, second of all, that's Rn minus 1, Rn, P n minus 1 to PP minus 1 is axial if every fiber, well, fiber means we fix a point here, and then we get Pn minus 1 to Pp minus 1, or the other way around, all these things homotopic to standard embedding. Makes sense when P is greater than M and N. Well, and then what is in the middle, for example, of this proof, that essentially these two definitions are the same. At least what's true for sure is that when one exists, the other exists, and vice versa. And sort of surprised us because people worked a lot with this, and this, at least we didn't know. Maybe it's what I expect from some people from the audience to tell me what is known about that. It's widely known that this is equivalent to that. Well, with some corrections on numbers. But anyway, this part. Another, by the way, nice thing for engineers is that any time you have an immersion here, you can explicitly build a motion planner using the frame coming from immersion. You can build a motion planner explicitly, and I think I say thank you. So let me just say one sentence. So this example is really deceptive. We're not computing much, but we're proving that it's a hard problem. It's probably equivalent to a very famous problem of immersion and of existence of some pairings, and that's what this new invariant is. Thank you again. For sure.
Questions?
How do you propose
a plan for CPN? Oh, CPN is easy. CPN is 2n plus 1. 2n plus 1. CPN and any at least, how do you call these things? Anything where there is this non-degenerate 2 form, symplectic. So any symplectic manifold has immediately 2n plus 1, Tc equals 2n plus 1. Because homological condition reaches the upper limit immediately because of this form. So as usual, a problem, as embedding problem for complex projective spaces is trivial.
Mm-hmm. So how large an n do not form?
Well, as the people ask, the people, or as I read the people in immersions, 47, I think, up to 47 is precisely known.
So your thing is not...
Yes, well, we're precisely there. Precisely. I mean, we take the table, say, in Jones, in what's his name? Not you, but James. He's James. And just copy this table. So after 47, for 48, they don't know that, so we don't know that.
So it's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same problem. Only three differences, 1, 3, 7, which are trivial. 1, 3, 7, our answer is n plus 1. So RP3 has TC4. That's one difference with what you get from there.
So what about those higher cases with the linkages?
In what sense you mean linkages?
You were talking about at the beginning with the rods.
You mean mechanisms, yeah. Linkage mechanisms? Well, we don't know any. Actually, outside of the example I gave you, I don't know precise spaces. There is a universal theorem by Kapovich and Milson about linkages, that they all can be, that anything can be essentially realized by linkages. Not quite, linkages give you configuration space which is not connected, but connected component is precisely arbitrary given, say, compact manifold. But, well, so.
Maybe the engineers might actually be interested in.
In some specific linkages, yeah. Oh, well, we would like to hear something from engineers, what linkages they specifically they are interested in. Because usually the spaces which people take labor to compute there, the configuration spaces, homotopically, very often they are very simple. Say configuration of points on graphs, they all contractable or something like that, they're not very interesting. But in interesting sports, this science started essentially spring of 2002, so it's young. So any interesting example would be appreciated.
Are engineers interested in the continuity of the motion planning?
I don't know. We hope it.
For example, if you don't request continuity, you can do it.
Yeah, right, right. If you don't request continuity, you can do. You can always do by one. I mean, if you don't, yes. Don't require continuity, you can do whatever you like. So I don't know. But it seems to be a natural problem. I mean, maybe engineers sometimes should be imposed on them what they're interested in. I know they should be interested. There is going to be a conference where there is going to be an attempt to advertise this among, not engineers, of course, but some computer scientists or something like that. I'm not sure.
Any more questions? Let's thank Sergey one more time. About 10 minutes.